Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. This is Laura Mize, barely here.
I thought I was going to have to do the intro myself, Laura. You made it!
After
whirlwind week. I don't know about the Sunday thing working out so easily, but we'll have to talk about that later.
Oh, my goodness. What a week. I've been in my house about 30 seconds and barely got the thing pulled up. But, oh, well, we're here. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Doing well.
How's the dream house going?
I've done lots of online ordering this weekend. I'm going to have sinks and all kinds of things come into my house pretty soon that I've been collecting. So I don't think we ever introduced ourselves, Laura.
I said I'm Laura Mize and I'm barely here, and I guess that just threw you from your normal thing.
Yeah, you always say the pediatric speech language pathologist part.
I'm off script. Sorry.
You're going to throw me for a loop. I need the script. Well, anyway, I didn't say I'm Kate Hensler. I'm a developmental interventionist with the First Steps program in Kentucky. That's all
right.
I really...
Oh, this is the rockiest start I think we've ever had. Oh, well, that's okay. It's Sunday, September... What is the date? Is it the 19th?
That sounds right. Yes, it is.
And if you're listening now, you're listening live, and we would absolutely love your call today.
Need a call. Somebody knowledgeable who can just talk a lot about what
while we pull ourselves together.
What they know. Yeah. Well, Laura's had a busy week. She had two big conferences, and I was lucky enough to attend the one on Thursday in Edinburgh, Indiana. Laura, it was great. It was everything I expected it to be and more. And I texted you, I don't know where you were, gallivanting around the place, but Friday I saw five kids, which is hard for me to do because I don't usually work much on Fridays, but I made myself this week. And I just was so, you know, just like, what would be the word? I was so upbeat and really, you know, felt like I had good sessions with kids and did a good job talking to parents, and was because I was inspired by everything you talked about on Thursday.
Aww.
Oh, really? Really? I mean, even by the end of the day, I thought, wow, I need to go to one of those conferences kind of on a regular basis.
Well, maybe you could just do my schedule with me.
I don't know that I need to go on that much of a regular basis. But no, seriously, you know, it just kind of recommitted me. I just felt, you know, kind of, just re-inspired about what I do and what I do right and what I could do better and being focused on, you know, what I could do better and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, thanks for a great conference on Thursday. I know everybody there thought it was terrific.
Well, I had a great day on Thursday, and I had a fun, fun day on Friday in Maryville. You told me that's your part of the world and how much fun I would have.
I believe I told you not to hold back, that folks from the region really aren't that though.
Well, I did not hold back, and
we're kind of straight shooters up north in northwestern Indiana. We don't mess around. And they were fun, weren't they?
Oh, they were a lot of fun, and just funky personalities and lots of opinions. And even if they differed from mine, they were still kind of fun. People really were shocked that in some areas, speech pathologists really do help confirm for parents that a child may be on the spectrum. And I think a lot of speech pathologists, especially the younger ones, felt like that was out of their league. And so we really talked about the ASHA position paper for speech pathologists says that speech pathologists are indeed qualified to help make that diagnosis. And so I think that was new information for lots of people. And not that I talk about that in every conference, but it is amazing to me to have the same outline and have the same general topic, but the examples are different that I give and the people's stories are different. And sometimes it just takes a little tangent, you know, and kind of we talk about things in different cities that we don't talk about in other cities, and that's something we talked about Friday. And the thing I think we talked about on Thursday that I had not talked about in the other conferences is, you know, the comment where we were talking about being compassionate with parents, and sometimes it's the first, you know, even if a parent, even if they've heard the same information about a diagnosis or bad news, or they really seem to kind of get it from one professional over another, or remember that discussion we had at the end?
Right.
Or even if you've said the same, or even if a therapist has said the same thing or had the same concerns, sometimes a parent doesn't hear that or really understand, excuse me, maybe prognostic information about their kid, or really kind of lifelong implications or even short-term implications and how difficult that is. And we haven't really had that discussion in any other conference. So it is interesting to me how I can have the same outline, same manual, same everything, but somehow it'll just kind of take a different turn in different places. So that makes it fun for me. I don't think this is ever going to get boring for me, and I am just having a blast doing it. It's just been so much fun.
Well, Laura, I have to admit that there's a little part of me that is like, I don't want to say jealous, just like all these years you've been my mentor, and now you're sharing it with everybody. And I think, oh, man, now everybody's going to go to her for everything, for information and help. You better just not ever change your cell phone number so that I have special access in case I need it along the way.
Oh, that's funny. And I do not give my cell phone number out at conferences for that very reason. So there you go.
Oh, no, yeah, that could be dangerous. But anyway, no, I'm teasing. Laura, you know, I was also thinking that this really is so cool that you're getting to talk about what you do and what you've studied and thought about and perfected for so long, and that people are benefiting from it. And as I recall, we've been friends a long time, and I remember you telling me that at one point you wanted to be a teacher, and your mother insisted that you do something with a little more, I don't know, job security, income.
She
encouraged
she
you to. Yeah, she didn't think that being a teacher was, you know, that you could aspire to loftier heights and do better doing something else, and encourage you to choose.
She wanted me to be able to support myself financially.
Right.
And that she was afraid that if anything ever happened, and then if I ended up an old maid, you know, which was that time in Mississippi, you know, nobody wanted their daughters not to get married. But, you know, if you ended up and were financially responsible for yourself, she just wanted to be sure that I could take care of myself. So she would say, please find something with that same skill that you can make a little bit more money. And speech pathology certainly was that. So she really did encourage me. Yeah.
Which was great forethought on your mother's part. That was shout out to Peggy for encouraging Laura to do what she was meant to do anyway. And then also thinking that, you know what, that's what you're going to end up doing. You're going to end up teaching speech. I mean,
I know. It's so cool. It's so cool. And I don't even have to be in an academic kind of research-based position either, because that would drive me nuts.
Oh,
that's
a bummer. Yeah, that would not.
Yeah,
that would definitely take the fun out of it, I think.
I know. So it's been a lot of fun. And I'm getting to do that. And that's so sweet for you to bring that up. And
well, really, I mean, I thought it really has come full circle, you know, that you're able to do the speech. I mean, you've done the speech and you continue to do the speech, you know, in the trenches with the kids' speech, but your interest and gift in teaching, you're being able to, and I mean, we joke all the time about, I'm going to get so-and-so to go to your training, I'm going to get so-and-so to go to your training, but now people are choosing to go, and I know, I mean, I was pretty familiar with a lot of the information and still felt inspired the day after and still today.
Aww.
But I can imagine what people felt who didn't know your information as well as I did, you know, who thought about things differently and thought, what would Laura have said to do in this situation? Because the title of your conference is, what is it? Teach Me Talk.
Early Speech Language Development, Taking Theory to the Floor.
Theory to the Floor. And you revisit that Theory to the Floor line and topic. I mean, it's pretty much what the whole thing is about, what you actually do. I always say
right.
In trenches. I guess you say on the floor.
On the floor.
With real-life kids. And so often we get trainings where it's all theory, And although it may be interesting, you do not leave feeling like, now I know how to go and deal with so-and-so who I've been struggling with. Or maybe if I try with this little girl what Lars suggested, you know, I'll get more from her tomorrow or today. And I know that people felt that when they went back to the floor with those kids thinking about, you know, I think one thing I've took from it that I already knew, but I haven't really heard articulated as clearly or as well, is your whole treatment hierarchy. I'm gonna really use that talking to parents and, you know, in my practice more routine. I mean, I never was as succinct or organized about saying those things, and I think putting it that way makes it not only more clear to the therapist, but more clear to the family.
I think so, too, and that's the one I've gotten so much positive feedback. And therapists have just been so sweet at the ends of every conference. You know, when they tell me how much they've enjoyed it, but when I go back and read the things they've written on the program evaluation, it just blows me away. And that's one thing that is overwhelmingly written on the sheets that says the hierarchy is what I had never really had put together in that way, and that makes so much sense, and it's going to make me better and make me better when I talk to parents about it and give me actual words to say. So I'm so excited it's going so well, and thank you so much for going on and on about it today. That was unexpected, but I
you know
I'm
unpaid advertising for you, so anything I say is genuine. I'm a region rat. If I don't mean it, I really don't say it. So anybody listening who knows people from Northern Indiana know that's probably true. And now Laura has been there and knows, yep, it's probably true.
Yeah. But it's been so much fun, and I just feel incredibly blessed. And it's been my dream for a long time, and I just keep telling Johnny, don't wake me up, don't wake me up, don't wake me up, because I can't believe I'm getting to do this. And it's just been a blast. So if you are listening and are near Evansville, I still have some spots for my conference this week in Evansville, and then next week I'll be in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and then you can check the website at teachmeatalk.com for those other dates that are upcoming. I'm speaking somewhere every week through Thanksgiving, and then I'm going to take a couple months off from speaking and write another book at that point, but we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to move on and talk about what we intended to finish up last week and did not get a chance, because we had a call from that great mom, and I called her Betty the whole time. And
I did, too, and then I see she responded, Patty? It sounded like Betty. Or maybe you repeated Betty, and that stuck, yeah?
I wish she had corrected me. I wish she had just said, no, it's Patty, but of
course
she was
way too
nice.
Don't you know there was a therapist saying, I believe her name is Patty.
Well, she
sorry, Patty, we both heard Betty.
I know. I didn't realize it until she became a fan on Facebook of TeachMeToTalk.com, and then I saw it and thought, oh, my gosh, I cannot believe I called her the wrong name for the whole time we talked to her. So sorry about that, Patty, if you're listening today, and if you're a mom that calls and we say your name incorrectly, correct us. I hate that. I hate it when people butcher my name, and they certainly do all the time.
My name, they tend to call me Kay, and I usually do point it out. It's not Kay, Kate, but that's because I don't say the T very well. Oh, well.
Oh, well, final
anyway, what she wrote back that she was kind of inspired to spend more time doing, like, home therapy with her little boy after she talked to us and we went through all that, right? Wasn't that her?
Yeah, it was, and she said that she had not really thought about this before, and this is something that I've talked about a lot on Friday in Maryville, is how to either get a sibling involved or get them. What we really talked to Patty about was getting her older little boy occupied so that Dad and she, when they were home independently with him, could work with him. And that's important a lot. Siblings are real life, and as therapists, we do figure out ways to kind of involve them in our therapy sessions. But sometimes the baby who needs that one-on-one attention doesn't get it unless we make plans for them to be occupied doing something else. And that's what she felt like she was going to do a better job doing, is getting her four-year-old occupied so that she and Dad could solely devote time. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, Laura.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just trying to say, I was thinking sometimes it's harder for parents to get an older sibling to kind of follow the rules with them the way that we try and get older kids to follow the rules because, hey, it's mom and dad. You know what I mean? With us, we can say, you know, you can do that when I tell you, or sign it like this, or say it like this, or, you know, we can coach them through, although they're a little bit more willing to play it to our rules than they are to their parents. With their parents are used to oftentimes kind of dominating, you know, and they kind of take over the session. And so that was helpful for her to know that, well, maybe the session could not include the older sibling some of the time or most of the time or whatever. So that, because, the younger kids who are struggling to talk are kind of used to being dominated or, you know, they don't necessarily, they need really one-on-one, especially if the older child is good at getting mom or dad's attention, which they usually are.
So. Right, and so I think that was good that she kind of came away with that, was thinking, okay, how can I meet my younger kid's needs by getting my older kid out of the picture so that we can do a little bit more one-on-one. So hopefully she got some new ideas for that. All right, what letter did we not get to last week? Do you remember, Kate? Do you have that email pulled up?
Well, I will shortly.
I had the email pulled up, but honestly, with what a whirlwind week I had, I don't think we did this one. Did we do the one about the mom who had the 14-month-old little girl?
No.
I don't think we did that.
Right.
Yeah, I think so, too. Let me read that. I have that pulled up, and we'll go ahead and start talking about this. And this is from a mom named Mindy, and it came in as a comment on my website at teachmetotalk.com, and this is what she says. She says, I have a 14-month-old little girl. She was diagnosed at 9 months with developmental delays by our school district. She qualified in the areas of gross and fine motor, speech, and cognitive, so kind of across-the-board delay. At that time, she was not sitting. So that's a pretty significant developmental delay because usually babies are sitting with typically developing babies 6 to 7 months, and almost every baby that doesn't have a gross motor delay is sitting about 8 months. Don't you think that's fair, Kate? A fair kind of age thing to say?
Yes, I do.
I think so, too.
Mm-hmm.
She says, okay, at 14 months, she is crawling, so that's great, and beginning to climb stairs, yay. We have not seen huge improvement in fine or speech, and she's in parentheses, puts oral motor. She has low muscle tone in her mouth and often has her mouth open. She lives in a bib due to the drool. We see an SLP at a private center as well, but she says, I want more, with an exclamation point. Where do I start? What DVD or book? She was saying vowels, and 3 weeks ago we got some consonants. She says, no piercing of the mouth. I guess she means she doesn't move her mouth very much. No consecutive suck and swallow, just puddles. I guess she means that she's not handling her drool. You know, we all see children with low muscle tone. It reminds me of my little friends with Down syndrome that have those open mouth postures, their tongues may be out, and what she's probably talking about is when she pulls her tongue back or even has it out, she's drooling all the time. So she's really, really, really wet, and she's not, for lack of a better word, swallowing her spit. So she's really, really drooly. And then she says, please help Mindy. You know, low muscle tone does affect speech and language. But mostly, when we think about a child having low muscle tone, it's going to make it harder for her to talk, but that's usually not because it requires more effort, because everything that you do with a kid, everything a kid tries to do when he has low muscle tone, it's just harder. It just requires more effort. But would that be the reason that she's cognitively delayed and her language is delayed? You know, it's not just about the muscles. There's overall, again, for lack of a better word, she's wired differently. There's a neurological delay. And so, do you know what I'm trying to say here, Kate? The low muscle tone is not the reason. You know, there are obviously probably, and she said, some cognitive things going on too. So from a conceptual basis, she probably still is not learning language, attaching meaning to words, learning to hit those little things like milestones, like pointing to body parts and understanding words and following directions. not because of the low muscle tone in and of itself. There's a conceptual delay, too. I don't think I'm explaining that very well. Do you want to take a stab at that?
Yes. I would, okay, you're talking about whether or not the low muscle tone is a direct cause of the language delay. And your
right.
theory or your position is that, no, it probably isn't, the low muscle tone. And I think people miss this a lot, really.
I do, too. And I'm trying to think of a better way to say
okay,
it.
Okay, I'm going to say the low muscle tone is related, as you said, to some neurological situation. We have no idea what that situation might be, but neurologically, in that child's brain, there's something that is not functioning typically, and so this low muscle tone, she sat very late, but it does sound like she's made some nice progress gross motor-wise. She's now crawling by 14 months, so that's great. But anyway, and sometimes we even hear in real life that therapists will say, well, she's not talking due to the low muscle tone, and there are a couple here that talk about it in their trunk a lot. They like to say that that is the reason kids aren't talking, and I think what you're saying is probably developmentally because she's delayed pretty much globally, according to the mother, or at least she was when she was evaluated. She's not talking because developmentally she's not ready to talk. You know, she's not at an age where kids typically talk, and they don't know at this point what effect that low muscle tone will have on her talking, but it's not the reason that she's not talking now. The reason is that neurologically, although she's made progress, she still has some sorts of neurological deficits, and so, but it doesn't surprise me really that her first progress was in gross motor. She's now crawling. She's obviously sitting, probably getting other, you know, skills along the way, gross motor-wise, and then it's excuse me, common and typical for kids with delays, that is usually the one that we see make progress. And then a lot of times it's fine motor skills get better. They begin to play with toys functionally. They begin to finger feed. They begin to, you know, all the little things that kids typically do. And I always say to parents, talking is the ultimate fine motor activity. You know, that it really is.
Yeah.
So don't be surprised when that's the last thing that comes into center stage and starts to make nice progress because it is, you know, the ultimate fine motor activity. But at this age with this child, we certainly can't say that she's not talking because she has low tone. She's not talking probably because developmentally she's not an age where kids talk. They won't know until down the road what effect the tone will have. And hopefully the tone will, it's already showing nice improvement and that will probably continue to improve as they work with her and she gets older. So, okay, now I'm rambling. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I think that you hit the nail on the head. And I really don't ever tell parents, I say, okay, he's going to have more difficulty talking because it's more effortful to do anything with low muscle tone than it would be if a child had muscle tone more in the normal range. And again, muscle tone is so hard to talk about and so hard to explain to parents because we all fall somewhere between low and high. And we even, I mean, normal, even people
low
with
still W
sits,
so I'm going to let our listeners guess which one she is.
I am on the lower end of normal. I really am. I can W-sit, and I have friends that totally freak out about that, and I W-sat as a kid, and my dance teacher loved that because I was flexible. I was a cheerleader in front that did the splits. That wasn't hard for me, again, because I'm on the lower end of normal with muscle tone. Olympians have high muscle tone. You know, you look at them and they're bulging all over. You see them when they run. And not only do they have those great leg muscles, their arms are so developed and they have high muscle tone. But every one of us falls somewhere along that continuum. Does that mean children with extremely low muscle tone are never going to talk? No. It means that when they are talking, they're going to be harder to understand. That's called dysarthria, if parents want to look that up, D-Y-S-T-H-R-I-A, dysarthria. And, again, that's when speech is sluggish and slurred and slower. That's the term that we use for that. We hardly ever call our little babies that. in early intervention. We hardly ever use that as a diagnostic term for children.
That's more again, a term used with stroke patients, isn't it?
Yeah, but it really could apply to any
I mean, I'm not saying it's not used.
Yeah.
It's just not a term that,
It's just not a term that early interventionists use.
Right, but it would be for some kids.
Yeah, it would be appropriate for some kids. But, you know, the thing is, though, and this is what I tried to say, and this is what I think you helped me really articulate. The low muscle tone in and of itself is not the reason that she's not talking. It's some kind of neurological, and again, for lack of a better word, damage or glitch or deficit, I think you said, that's made the overall thing there, the overall issue. Oh, my goodness, I have something going off. I think that's my fax machine. The overall issue has caused the low muscle tone, and again, from a conceptual cognitive basis, also caused this little girl not to understand language yet. And, of course, if she's not understanding language yet, she's not going to be able to talk yet. So, again, some neurologists or even other speech pathologists might not like the way that we've just explained that, but I like to tell moms that so that it's pretty clear that that's not the only reason. And I think parents miss that. Don't you think a lot of parents miss that, and therapists don't do a really good job talking about that with parents?
Well, yes, I do. I will say it's easier to talk about in theory, the theory behind it than it is to actually sometimes say it directly to a parent. But, and just because we're saying there's some neurological dysfunction or glitch or something doesn't mean we're making any leaps and bounds beyond that. We're just saying, you know, her brain isn't functioning typically, or her development would be typical. And And that doesn't mean that we're making a prediction in the future, because lots of kids who look like this at 14 months look really pretty darn good by 2.5, 3.
By the time they turn 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, you know, I told a mother the other day, and I know this for a fact, is that, you know, that's why we have an early intervention, is because there's no other time in a child's development other than between 0 to 3 where a child's brain is developing so rapidly. And if you're going to have a positive, I mean, even older children and adults can have issues with their brains, whatever that might be, and make amazing progress beyond that. But nobody makes more amazing progress than 0 to 3-year-olds, because their brains are changing very rapidly at that age. So even if she does have some neurological or brain glitch or deficit or whatever, misfire of some variety, there's no better time in that child's development to positively affect how her brain's going to function long term.
Exactly. And that's why we do early intervention. That's why this is the most fun population any therapist would want to work with, is because we see amazing results.
Amazing.
With this. And amazing, yeah, when we get in and do the right things. The other thing is, and Dr. Rossetti said this a lot, and when I've gotten to hear him speak twice, and he says maturation makes us all look good in early intervention, because most of the time kids get better as they get older. Now, does that mean that we don't do any therapy, that we just sit and wait? No, but it just means that when we're doing the right things and we do the things that we know work with children, maturation comes along and helps us too, and it helps it all get a little bit better because systems mature neurologically, kids come together. And so kids do get better as they get older, especially when their parents take this stuff really, really seriously, as it sounds like Mindy is. So, Mindy, we've talked a lot about kind of, again, this would be the theory part about the nature of developmental delays and when we have children with low muscle tone. But from a practical standpoint, she's saying, what should I do? And I love that she's saying she wants to do more to help her. And really, that's where it comes down to, is just where moms really know. It's not really the speech therapy, that 1 hour a week in and of itself, that's going to make her better. It's all this stuff that I do between the appointment times that would make her better. So she's wanting some more practical things to do at home. I would suggest that you take a look at the receptive language section on the website and the social games article there, and really make sure that your little girl is tuned in with you socially, and that she's learning to really interact with you, and that she's beginning to link meaning with some early commands that you want her to do, like waving bye-bye, like reaching to be picked up. Again, realizing the things that are associated with daily routine so that when you're saying, you know, do you want to, let's go take a bath, so that she's looking toward the bathroom. If you're saying it's time to eat, so that she starts to move toward the kitchen. When you say, I think Daddy's home, that she starts looking around for Dada. Those kinds of things, so that you really build that foundation for her with her social skills and with her receptive language skills, so that when she's physiologically ready to talk, she has something to talk about. So that's what I would emphasize if I were her speech pathologist. I would not be overly concerned right now with her sounds, with what vowels and consonants she has. It would be much more meaningful to me for her to really be playing with me and, again, interacting and smiling and having that nice social connection and then demonstrating that she's starting to understand language with those early receptive language skills, and then we would worry about those sounds. So she's asking what DVD or book she should get if she's struggling with how to play with her socially. And a lot of kids with low muscle tone have kind of a flat affect, and by that I mean they're not as responsive when you play with them. Kate, do you want to say your line you like to say about these kids sometimes? Do you know what I'm talking about?
You mean that one that I used to say to you on the phone in our private conversation?
That I'm now outed you. Yeah, I used this on Friday, too, at Maribel.
Oh, you did? Well, at least I wasn't there to be publicly humiliated. If a bomb went off, they wouldn't. Is that the one you're doing?
Yes, that's exactly the one I'm referring to. That sometimes children are so flat, their affects are so flat. And again, this doesn't always accompany children with low muscle tone, but it does a lot. That they don't even really respond. It takes a lot to get these kids to respond and react.
I think my exact line is, he wouldn't blink if a bomb went off.
Yeah, no. There you go. And we don't know that about Minnie's little girl.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's just that, I mean, it stands to reason. If kids don't have very good muscle tone and muscle control, you know, they're just kind of, here's my other negative thing I say, and now I'm outing myself. I call them lumpy babies. You know, they just really, it's hard for them to move. It's hard for them to manipulate things. It's, you know, they may have sweet little personalities and smile and that some, but they do tend to be kind of low arousal kids. You know, they're just kind of, it's hard for them to move. They're not the wired bouncing off the walls kids. They're the sit there and passively take it in kids.
Yeah. And so if she's having trouble with that, Teach Me to Play with You, which is my therapy manual, would be good for Mindy to teach her some games and some little routines to get her baby more socially participatory with her.
Choice. And, you know, a lot of your things in there, Laura, are they involve movement, which is going to be good for this little girl because movement she needs. And some of them you could even work in. I'm sure the PT she's working with has her doing things like reaching to the side and sitting and playing in kneeling position, and would be very easy to adapt some of those things that her PT is telling her into some of those social games that you've written about, because some of them are when they're bouncing on your lap or when they're, you know, you could modify them just slightly and accomplish working with the gross motor stuff the PT is telling her to do, because PTs don't always make it as much fun as the speech therapists do. So I say, that would be a great, and we, for all we know, this is a really very socially connected child, but even if she is, it would be good to work on the receptive language stuff that you can do with those social games too. So, and you know, I guess we can assume she still has some receptive delays, and but it does sound like mom is very focused on the expressive, and we would counsel, don't be so worried. The expressive is going to come along when the tone gets better and when her receptive skills get better. And I would say,
when she has something to talk about.
So that's that treatment hierarchy, and we always say start with social skills and then always the receptive skills. So both of those great suggestions. How about teaching me to talk? I don't know. See, we don't know anything about her speech therapist. We don't know what she's encouraging her to do.
We don't know anything about that, but that, the Teach Me to Talk, the DVD would be good because it really does kind of outline a basic philosophical approach.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that might be good as well. And really, it's going to show you how to play with her so that she's going to want to be with you and want to learn from you. And it also will get you started with doing some really basic signing with her. You know, and it sounds like the speech pathologist that she has really might be overly focused on those oral motor things.
It does sound like it. It does to me. Yeah. Just from what, because she puts in parentheses at one point, oral motor stuff, and then also talking, you know, she obviously has an interest herself in the consonants and vowels, but if that's coming from the speech therapist,
I would say a little early
for that. Yeah, let's make sure that we have the foundation of our hierarchy, starting with the social stuff, moving on to the receptive stuff, and I would guess that those aren't really intact just based on where she was when she was 9 months evaluated, you know, and she says her fine motor skills haven't improved very much either, so am I going to assume that her speech skills are still delayed? Yes, because her progress is typical as far as what we see with children. Their gross motor is typically the one that comes along first, and that's moving along. Fine motor-wise, I would say to this mom, you know, eating, I think, is the best fine motor activity for kids this age, and I don't know anything about her diet or what she is doing eating-wise, but make sure that to the best of this child's ability, she's offering a lot of different things for her to touch and her to self-feed and her for, because, again, that's going to give her some, quote-unquote, oral motor activity, like eating. Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Yeah, talk about functional, crunchy, chewy food. And don't you think that, though?
Because I could see this child not being, okay, again, I'm making an assumption, could be totally off base, but I would guess this kid isn't a great self-feeder or isn't eating a whole lot of table food. I mean, it could be totally wrong, but just based on, you know, the picture she shared, and it's just a little snippet, so for all I know, this kid eats burgers and fries, but I'm guessing probably not a whole lot of solid foods, and I would encourage her to really experiment with what the child can tolerate, what the child can swallow, and, not, you know, we don't want her choking, anything like that, but to the extent that she's able, I think that is, you know, parents don't always necessarily aren't comfortable with that.
Prioritize it.
Yeah, and they'll, and really, that's really a really important thing, I think, is that kids, you know, as soon as physically possible to introduce solid foods, and she's 14 months old. Most kids are eating some solid foods by then, but she may not be. So definitely get working on that. And as I joked about ultimate fine motor activity. It is. A lot of kids, when they have fine motor delays, they're not good feeders. They can be very passive about eating as well, and they'll sit there and let mommy shovel in baby food for a long, long, long time. Meanwhile, they're not getting the experience they really need in the practice and the therapeutic exposure, if you will, to food, you know, to little pieces of vegetables and little pieces of fruit and spaghetti noodles and all the little baby foods that kids can, you know, self-feed, the little puff crackers and the, you know, whatever, because they are passive about it. And a lot of parents kind of like, oh, I know how much she eats and I can give her her vegetables and it's all pureed and the baby passively opens her mouth and lets you feed her, long past when typically developing kids do. And I can see why they do it, but I'd say, okay, time to, you know, encourage her to start eating.
And she probably is talking with the speech pathologist about that, because it sounds like they're doing, again, an oral motor approach.
Mm-hmm.
So I would bet that they're talking about that, and your whole point is when children move along to self-feeding, not only are they, you know, they're crawling up that developmental continuum, also in the fine motor area, because they're having to use their little fingers to touch different textures and get those to their mouth successfully.
Right.
And so that's terrific practice. And when kids get better with that kind of thing, it spills over and their play automatically gets better because they can use their hands better. And your point to that is, what better way to target those fine motor skills than with an activity that she needs to be doing three times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
At least.
So to do it that way.
Plus
a
couple
of snacks.
Yeah. Right? I guess you're right. Probably the speech therapist is encouraging that. The other one I'd wonder is, what's she doing with drinking? Laura, I know that you've taught me well on as soon as kids can transition to a straw cup, especially these kids who are showing that low
mm-hmm.
tone in their face and their drawers.
Right.
That's like the best real-life therapeutic tool for those droolers with the tongues that are loose out of their mouths is to suck from a straw. Now, that can sometimes be a little difficult to get, and she's little. She may not be ready, but first a sippy cup and then a straw because that's great sucking. And
that's going to move her along with all that oral motor
right.
stuff. And the stuff that you just talked about, drinking and feeding, those things are going to give her much more practice and, again, be much more functional than you trying to do mouth exercises with her or manipulate her little mouth in some way. You know, it's going to be much better if she can do that actively through eating and through drinking. And, again, there's no amount of quote-unquote exercises that you're going to be able to do that will truly, again, quote-unquote, fix that tone, you know, I guess normalize or help that her become more functional with that. You know, she may have low muscle tone her entire life, but, again, that doesn't mean that she can't become a totally functional communicator and, again, with feeding, too. So those are great points, and we hardly ever talk about feeding on this show because we're such language people, but that's an excellent point for a kid with low tone. And all those things that mom is concerned about, her oral motor skills, her fine motor skills, really can be targeted every day through feeding.
Right.
And she's going to have to eat anyway, so there you go. So those are great, great, great ideas. I hope Mindy listened to the show today. I'm going to go back and put on the website, and if I can, dig out her email and shoot her a message and let her know that we talked about this today. So hopefully she's gotten some great ideas from there.
The only other thing on when she gets to the straw cup stage, I always encourage parents. I mean, I've had the best luck on getting them. If you just get a little kid's cup with a straw, a lot of times they just don't really get that initial. They have to suck on it to get it out. And I have had good luck getting, and they're almost like the therapy straw cups. I just buy the little, or have parents buy the little, like Rubbermaid plastic little thermos bottles that kids use, you know, little kids' cup.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, they're like $2 or something. But the reason I think they help is that you can squeeze them. Once you put water or juice in it, whatever, milk, squeeze it, and it expresses the liquid up into the kid's mouth. And that's how the therapy straw cups work, is that you can squeeze them and it shoots it up so that they, once, you know, they've done that a few times and they get the liquid, it's very reinforcing and they think, oh, if I suck a little bit, I'll get some, which is exactly what you want them to do. But
exactly.
Just with a normal cup, there's no way to, they're usually hard and you can't squeeze them to get the liquid up.
But the little Rubbermaid you can.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great idea. Excuse me, I use juice boxes a lot for that, too, because those are so easy to squeeze. And a lot of times moms don't like that because you really do need to dump the first few squeezes out in the sink because they're too full.
Because it'll make a little fountain, yeah.
yeah. But you can squeeze the juice boxes, too, and get it in there. A lot of moms will try to do, like, the baby bird method to get a kid a straw drink. Don't do that.
Yeah, I don't. It's not the same.
No. It's totally not the same.
It's like a spoon, yeah.
Right.
And she means by that if you suck it up into the straw and take it out with your hand on the end and then you use it like a dropper in their mouth.
Don't do that.
I've seen that a lot. Yeah, that doesn't really help. But the using that Rubbermaid cup or the juice box is the same idea. You're getting the liquid into their mouth and they go, ooh, that's yummy. I think I'll try sucking on it and see if I get more.
And you can really sit there and kind of with the juice boxes, because you can see the juice come up in the straw, you can get it to where they have to suck a teeny bit too. After they've had some practice, you can maybe squeeze it so that it's halfway up.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the kid starts to realize, oh boy, I do a little suck right there, and that's going to,
yeah,
I can get that in
my mouth
by myself.
She says this little girl doesn't have a great suck-swallow pattern.
Right.
And she may not be ready for either the juice
she
cup
may
box
not,
or
yeah.
the Rubbermaid cup. But as soon, I mean, again, just alerting her to, just as I'm encouraging her to focus and encourage the baby to use, to move to table food and to self-feed with her fingers, And I'd even help her if it means hand over hand, if she can tolerate any of that texture at all, I'd help her get to that stage where she's picking it up and shove, even if it's not pretty, you know,
mm-hmm.
even if it's a mess.
Yeah.
She can still give her some spoonfuls of or pureed food if she needs to, but just really every meal introducing some kind of solid food that she needs to get to her mouth with her hands. If she needs help, help her, but get moving in that direction. And same with the straw cup. And
right.
And then again, of course, like you said, on our other recommendations with the focusing on receptive language skills and the social skills first. And see, we don't know this child, so we don't know. But we just know that it's not uncommon for kids we've seen who kind of present like this, that we would definitely be encouraging the social connection with us, with parents, with, you know, because sometimes they are kind of children who are not real responsive. It takes a lot. You know, you really have to amp it up, as Laura says, to get them to respond.
Mm-hmm. And so she's just going to want to keep doing those kinds of things. And so I think we've given her some good ideas, and I hope that that matches what her speech pathologist is telling her too. And if Mindy wants to shoot us something back and give us more specific information, we'll be glad to continue to talk about that. All right, let's move on to this mom named Carla, and she's actually left me two comments on the website, so boy, do I want to try to follow up with her. She says, my son is 25 months old, 23 months adjusted, so I guess she means he was a couple of months early, and let me just say as a reminder, we do not adjust for age after a child hits that second birthday. So that's something that a mom may be hearing for the first time, even if you have a kid who was like this little boy, it looks like he was probably 8 weeks early. The child development specialists tell us really after 24 months we no longer adjust age for prematurity, so she should just stick with that. He's over two, he's 25 months. And she says, okay, here she says he was born at 30 weeks. We are doing an evaluation because he only says a few words, buff or balloon and ball, cuff or cookies, hi, fab for bye, and it looks like CAC, maybe AC for car. He can say mama and agua for water and uva for grapes. Do you know the Spanish word for grapes, Kate? I might be mispronouncing
No.
that.
Mm-mm.
I'm not fluent in Spanish at all. Even though I took that in college, you would think I would have retained that a little bit. But anyway, that's a side
Really, you live in Shelbyville.
Here.
You better practice up.
Oh, my goodness, we're off today. Okay, here we go.
I'm sorry,
I'm
just had to cut that one in.
Okay, we speak Spanish, but he is learning English, too. He can make the sounds for cow, horse, dog, and pig. He can follow simple directions, not all the time, but he does. We go to Gymboree, and that seems to help, too. We're waiting for the evaluation result, but before we did, he was watching a DVD called My Baby Can Talk. He learned almost all the baby signs, and I'm very interested in buying your DVDs, too. What do you recommend? And then she goes on in her second comment a week later, and I bet she's wondering, why the heck aren't you responding to me? And, again, I would say to all these moms lately, I'm so sorry my life is on overdrive, but I'm going to try to get better about responding.
You need a fancy phone so you can do it by your phone. It's
yeah.
time to bite the bullet.
I know. I probably, with the way I stimulated the economy over the last few days with our shopping extravaganzas, should have probably added that to the list. But that's a side conversation, too. Anyway, okay, she says, my son is going to start speech therapy soon. He bubbles all the time. I bet she means babbles. He babbles all the time and says 20 words total. He follows simple directions, and he already recognizes color. And she says red goes in the red basket. She's meaning that he's matching. He likes to play with blocks and Legos, and he's good at that. I forgot to tell you all these things in my first comment. I don't know which DVD I should buy, or is there only one kind? Is there only one kind? I'm so confused. Carla, on the website, I actually have three different DVDs that are for sale. Two of them are two DVD sets. So the first one is Teach Me to Talk, and that's the one that I would recommend for you guys because you're just starting speech therapy. It sounds like he already has some words. Yeah, she says he has about 20 words. He's turned two. She says he's following simple directions, but she also clarifies that and says not all the time, but he does. So what I would recommend is that she go ahead and get Teach Me to Talk, again, just to kind of outline the basic strategies and the basic early things that we like to put in place with children when they first start speech therapy. He's already signing, so again, maybe she'll see some different things on there and find some new ways to kind of use so that he can use those signs communicatively, not just by watching the other DVD that she's mentioned. And I don't know that DVD. Do you, Kate? My Baby Can Talk?
I think I do.
Okay. Well,
it's really messed. It's kind of, if I'm right, if it's the one that I've seen, it's kind of, I want to say, Baby Einstein-ish. It has it has a kid and has shows the word and it shows the written word and then the kid says it and they show the object, you know. But it's kind of a Baby Einstein approach.
Well, what I would really encourage Carla to do with him is to make sure that he's using those signs in everyday life and not.
Where are you
just
getting
the
signs? Was that in the first part?
She says. She says the first one we're waiting. It was from September 8th.
Oh.
Are you there? Are you trying to look at that too?
No.
No, you're just listening. Okay. She says we're waiting for the evaluation result, but before we did that, he was watching a DVD called My Baby Can Talk. He learned almost all the baby signs.
Oh.
And she says, I'm very interested in buying your DVDs too. My DVDs are for moms and dads and grandparents and therapists to teach you how to work with children with communication delay. So it's not a DVD that he would sit and watch at all. And the other DVD that we think that you're talking about is one that he would sit and watch. And so what happens a lot of times with this situation, and Kate, tell me if you've had this happen, that a mom will tell you, my kid has learned some signs with the DVD, but that's the only time they do the signs.
Right.
It's when the DVD is on, and they have not transferred that to everyday life. So Carla needs to look at what he's signing or what he's learned with the DVD and make sure that's meaningful to him. And again, it could be. We don't know that. She didn't tell us that it's not, but I'm just saying that's certainly something that I've seen before. Yeah, on my caseload now that I've seen him for a long time, and he's on the spectrum, and he routinely hits my hands away when I try to sign with him. But Mom tells me that he'll do it with the Signing Times DVD. And so I think he's having a really hard time making those signs meaningful and functional. So in my mind, has he mastered those signs? No. And we need to figure out a way to get those signs from kind of a passive use that he's just imitating that when he sees that visual presentation on TV to the point that he could use those signs, that he could use those signs to label if he's learned a lot of, like Carla said, she didn't say how many signs he's learned. She said he's learned almost all the baby signs. But my guess is that he's learning those in the context of labeling what it is on the screen. We want him to also use those signs to request so that if he's learned the sign for cookie on the video, that he's also using it to ask Carla or Dad for a cookie when he wants it. So, again, she takes that from being a neat baby trick that goes along when he watches the DVD to him being able to use those things communicatively. So if that's not something he's doing, that's certainly something that I would suggest that she implement right away. And as far as my DVDs, again, know that those are for parents and start with Teach Me to Talk and then see what your speech pathology evaluation results are, and then you can kind of go from there to know if how he's doing receptively, because you'll get a good age equivalency with there. You'll know if how he's understanding languages within normal limits, and if you just have an expressive language problem going on or if it's more a global delay. He's also maybe it sounds like could also be a little bit delayed in how he understands language as well. And if that's the case, you'll want to do some other things to target his receptive language too. So that would be my response to Carla.
And if that were the case, Laura, if in fact the speech language eval reveals that he does have receptive language, then Teach Me to Listen and Obey Part 1 would probably be appropriate.
Yeah, Part 1, or she may even want to bump on that to Part 2, because she says that he follows some directions some of the time. And some moms can say that, and that might mean that one time out of 20 he does it. Mm-hmm. And some moms are a little bit more objective, and when they say he follows it some of the time and all the time, they may mean 10 times out of 20. So it just means, you know, she's just going to have to see. If he has a pretty significant delay, more than, say, let's say he's 25 months, if they come back that he's that his receptive skills are less than an 18-month-old level, then get Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1. But if it's higher than that, get Teach Me to Listen and Obey 2, because it goes on into target more advanced vocabulary, like teaching verbs or action words and teaching location words, which you'll remember back to English are called prepositions. It'll teach you how to work on some of those more advanced things in play. And it also has a behavioral kind of discipline section on there, too, because so many parents struggle with having children who don't understand language and they really think it's a behavioral problem rather than a receptive language problem. And it just kind of talks about how to differentiate between the two and some approaches that you can use that are not really punitive or punishment. And, you know, it just some really simple things you can do to redirect and help you kind of focus on comprehension rather than behavior. Okay.
But as with our last question, you know, we're always going to say, sight unseen, we don't know your child, and if
right.
these things are looking great, ignore it. But, you know, we always kind of say, and you've coined the phrase now, so I can refer to the treatment hierarchy and just to kind of look at our social skills. How are his receptive language skills? Then she can begin to really focus and prioritize about the expressive skills, and not really until those things are at a very near age level, the social skills and the receptive skills. Is it really appropriate to be too concerned about the expressive skills, which is, you know, we see so often most parents or many parents, it's all about what can he say? What does he say? What does he say? I mean, we want them to talk, you know, and we certainly understand that. We spend all day, every day, trying to get kids to talk, and we do value the importance of that. But parents don't always stop and think, well, how are his social skills? Well, how are his receptive skills? They're really focused on the expressive skills. And that's kind
right,
of
right, and I think sometimes that really gets a speech therapist kind of thrown off her game when
mm-hmm.
a parent is so, I want him to talk, I want him to talk, I want him to talk, rather than hearing what she's really saying when she says, well, now he's not really understanding language either. And sometimes, you know, earlier in my career, I might have really fallen for that and not helped a mom really see, well, he's not talking because he doesn't understand. And what I've really started saying lately is, we have to give him something to talk about. He has to understand language first before we really expect him to be able to use a lot of words and those be meaningful.
That is a hard. I mean, I am going through a situation right now with a family and have spent quite a bit of time talking about that, and it can be a hard sell, and it can be painful for parents to hear sometimes because that may indicate
yeah.
there's something bigger going on. There's something a little more significant
serious.
About this mm-hmm. language issue that your child's having, and I get it. I mean, I'm a mom. I, you know, wanted perfect children. I didn't get them, but I sure wanted them, and each time I was forced to realize they're not quite perfect, you know, that's hard. I mean, it's just nobody wants to hear that there's a problem here, and it could be a little bigger than you suspected, and, you know, I hate saying those things, but I'm with you, Laura. I think you're ahead of me in talking frankly and frankly and constructively about those things, and I'm kind of learning as I go always about how you do that. But it's important to do that because that's really the bigger issue, and it's the foundation for the expressive language, which is what parents really want to see, and I get that too.
Right.
Every mommy wants to hear mommy, and I love you, and, you know, all those things that make you weepy just to think about them as I get older. But, you know, I mean, I get it. But so, yeah. So, and she'll know once the child gets evaluated probably where he is in those other areas, and we're just saying focus on those other areas and build the foundation, and the expressive is going to come along. And I think your point about generalizing what he's learning in those videos, I am not, and I think I speak for you on this, Laura, we are not huge proponents of showing young kids videos of any variety or TV, for that matter, for much time at all, you know. So
Yeah. The American Academy of Pediatrics says no child under two should have TV at all. Mm-hmm. And, again, that's a deal breaker for a lot of parents, and parents don't really want to hear that. And they say, well, if you lived in my house and I can't take a shower and blah, 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 blah. And I say, okay, well, then maybe only use TV when you have a really important phone call to make, or when there's a, you have to take a shower and you have not been able to do any other, you know, you can't find any other way to occupy your kid. But otherwise, TV really isn't anything that we recommend for young children. And, I know a lot of parents hate that. And I think that the toy industry and the entertainment industry have really misled, you know, now a couple of generations of parents into thinking that just because they call something educational that it is. And so I would, again, he's learned those signs. You can't undo what you've already done, but at the same time, make those really communicative for him and make him have to use those in his everyday life. That's not just something he does when he watches that.
Right. If they're not. I mean, we don't know if they are.
Yeah,
but
we don't know.
If
yeah.
they're not. And I, too, Laura, have seen those kids who they can do it when the DVD's on. They imitate them, you know, but they are not
right.
using them throughout their daily routines to really label or request anything. You know,
right.
they don't
and we
really
want to change that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Make them functional.
Yeah,
make them communicative.
Make them real.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
All right. I think we're at the end of this hour. It started out so poorly, so rocky. I'm glad we
made it. Good thing we had good questions to respond to. Those always save us, don't they, Laura?
I think so. If you would like your question answered on air, we would absolutely love for you to call us next Sunday at 4 o'clock at the call-in number. It's 1-718-766-4332. If you can't bring yourself to do that, you can leave me a comment on my website at teachmetotalk.com or send me an email at laura@teachmetotalk.com or leave a comment on Facebook on the teachmetotalk.com page. So any way you want to get it to us, we would love to hear your question because your questions really are what make this show. I love that that's how we determine topics for the show now. We take a question, just talk about it. I love that format, and so I hope that we continue to
that was one thing I meant to say when we were talking about the first baby with the low tone, is that that mom, if she hasn't already, might want to go back into podcast history and look at the one where Michelle was on. We had a PT who talked about tone issues on the
show.
Yeah,
she explained it much better.
She did
than
a nice job
there.
Of discussing. Yeah, and I thought it was, helpful for me and might be helpful for that mom. So if she, too, is struggling with what exactly does this tone stuff mean, go back and listen to that podcast.
Yeah, and I think it was in, was that the first year, the first fall we did the podcast? Is that when we had a lot of guests? I think it was.
I don't remember either.
Just look back there because it'll say something. And I really think it's like October of 2008 is when it was. But just, I could be wrong about that. Email me.
The title
me
will
if
say there's
listening.
A guest, Michelle.
Yeah.
Was
Michelle
it
Wilder.
Wilder.
Yeah.
Who's a local PT here who's good and talked to us about tone issues and what the ramifications of that might be. And, you know, so if she wants a little primer on tone, maybe her PT's already told her lots. But I thought Michelle was good about talking about that, so she might want to listen. Other than that, I think we've done it.
I think so. Tune in next week. We'd love to have you. And call us. All right. Have a great week.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.